We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life. Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode.
I'm working in the iThemes office today from Oklahoma City, which has been really fun. It's just like a really cool, creative group of people working here at iThemes. And they have like a bunch of Lego sets around the office, including this Ferris wheel that I really am trying to like inhibit myself from like taking down and playing with. I feel like there should be more Legos in offices around the world.
Yeah, that sounds super cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
I'm envious.
You have Legos in your office.
This is true. As well as a 3D printer and some other random things. But the iTheme office is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's in a storefront, so it looks sneaky. Like from the outside, it just sort of looks like a random like strip mall storefront. But then you come in and they have kind of this maze of rooms that are a combination of conference rooms and open space offices and then some smaller offices. But you can just tell that the crew that works here is, you know, they're playful, they're creative. There's lots of like whiteboard walls all around that have like legit work on it. And then like lots of fun doodles and like pictures of turtles. And then they have Legos around. I don't know. It's just that cool, the cool startup vibe.
Yeah, that's fun. It's always good to get to a new place, and it kind of gives you a, like working from a new place gives me new perspective. I tend to get a ton done the first few days when I discover a new coffee shop or when I'm working at a new office like that or a new co-working space, just this different stimulation.
Yeah. There's kind of this infusion of fresh energy.
Totally.
Based on a new location.
Yeah.
So, we've been sending some article links back and forth. And I thought maybe today we could talk about a couple of the articles that we've read lately that, you know, that have been interesting.
Yeah, I think that's a good plan. I know one of them is an interview and it's not super meaty, but there are some kind of cool takeaways. And then the other one has a lot more points to it, although some of them may be things that we already know, but it's always good to refresh.
So the first one is an article from Entrepreneur Magazine, and it was an interview with founder of Expedia. And I am not sure how to pronounce his name. Do you know?
You know, I have no idea. It's Dara Khosrowshahi is what it looks like. I know he's the CEO. I'm not sure that he's the founder, but he's definitely, you know, running a big company like that. He's got to have some chops in some form or fashion.
Yeah, I'm thinking, yes, he has some chops. The article is an interview and they were asking him about basically like different life skills that he developed at different phases of his life. And it's called Expedia CEO shares the critical traits to develop by age 30. I didn't really figure out why these things need to be developed by age 30. Like that sort of timeline didn't really make sense with me.
Pretty arbitrary.
Yeah. It just sounds like a headline.
Yeah. They phrased the question, what were the key talents you developed during your 20s? And it's like, okay, maybe this is just aimed at, you know, at millennials or something. And they wanted to angle it that way.
The two that he highlighted were focus and flexibility. And I really like that combination in terms of thinking about leadership, being a founder, getting things done in life. They seem like a nice balance. He actually talked about them sort of separately, but I like how they balance each other out.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, we can say these two words, focus and flexibility, that doesn't have a ton of meaning on their own, but he specifically gives an example when he says, when I was in my 20s, I learned not only how to work hard, which I actually think is a third one that he touches on, but he says, but about the importance of focus, that he was in investment banking and it was the go-go days of media mergers. And they were super busy, but he said he felt empowered that they didn't have this formal FaceTime culture and they were allowed to focus. And then he says, you should identify specific takeaways from your first few roles as a young professional that will prove relevant for a lifetime. Early on, I learned the importance of being acutely focused on my goals and the importance of fostering a culture that avoids unnecessary restrictions. I think that's something when you're in your 20s, I know I had no clue that what I was doing and building and learning, I would then use in my 30s and my early 40s. And it really has, you know, if you ever heard that the Steve Jobs graduation speech, he talks about how like he learned, I think it was calligraphy or fonts or something in, you know, when he was auditing classes at a JC. And later on, that was one of the reasons that he really pushed for the Mac to have amazing fonts. And there were a couple other things like that, that he's like, these things didn't seem to be a big deal at the time. But over the coming decades, they shaped the way he created product. And I feel the same way about like some of my younger experiences. It's your unique take. It's the things that you bring that are different, that you learn in your early career that allow you to bring a unique take to things as you get older.
This is where I really differed with at least the author of this article, like putting a timeline on this skill. Because when I think about my 20s, one of the best things that I did, and I think this is actually what you're referencing as well, is I said yes to sort of everything. Like I did lots of different kinds of projects. And I wasn't ready to focus. Like I wasn't necessarily ready to like really dial into one specific area of expertise. We could also say that I've never really been ready to dial into one specific area of expertise, which is maybe another topic. But I think especially early career in my 20s, having just this real breadth of experiences and I mean, just going lots of places, doing lots of things, both professionally, was really important and allowed me to focus more in my 30s. Obviously, as an academic, my timeline is different. You know, I spent 10 years in graduate school, roughly. So I had 10 years to try everything. And then, you know, there's sort of this decade progression of your career process as an academic. So I like this focus in terms of like being really clear about learning well, because you're all in, like you're focused on the task at hand, you're focused on what you're learning, you're focused on sort of that present moment. You're not overly distracted or overly burdened by meetings or things that don't matter that much. But I would at least put in a plug for early career folks to, rather than like focus on one specific expertise, like to use those early years to really have a variety of experiences.
Yeah, I think you bring up a really good point when you say yes to everything early on. I was taking his focus as focus on what you're doing at the time, but not necessarily decide on a lifelong focus in your 20s. I think both can be right. I think you saying get a breadth of experience is exactly what I would recommend as well. But while you're getting that breadth, don't try to do five things at once. He's saying like he was able to focus on investment banking and learn a bunch of stuff, and then he bounced to the next thing. And that's, I feel like you can do both.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I would talk about focus differently in like the sort of the middle iteration of your career.
Right. You get into your 30s, mid 30s or whatever, and then it's probably time. It depends, but it's probably time if you want to be really good at something and have a legacy that you need to kind of pick one or two things and really, really dive neck deep into those.
Right. That's when it's time to learn to say no.
Yep, exactly.
So the second thing that he talked about as a critical trait that I really loved was flexibility, which I think I love because that's kind of core to who I am.
Right.
But I think it is such an incredible skill when you think about running a company, having your own business, the ability to just to be able to pivot and move and know that very few things in business or in life are static, that there's a lot of movement, and to be able to adjust and anticipate shifts, I think is a really super important skill.
Yeah. And I think, you know, obviously I work with and talk with a lot of developers who become entrepreneurs, not exclusively, but, you know, I'd say 60-70% of the folks who come to MicroConf or listen to Startups for the Rest of Us or read the blog are developers. And we tend to be a little more rigid, left-brained. And this is a weak spot. It's a blind spot of myself. And I think of a lot of the developers who are trying to become entrepreneurs. Dara, you know, again, the guy being interviewed, he says he learned in his 20s how critical flexibility is. Learning to cope with endless demands on your time at a young age will both position and prepare you for advancement and growth. As you move up, business problems become nonlinear and systems less predictable. A uniform approach just won't cut it. So you have to approach problems differently with flexibility. This is something I didn't learn until my 30s, mid-30s. I mean, as you run any type of product or company, you're going to realize how little you can control. Unlike when you're writing code, right? Or you're building, doing a design, or even writing an article where you can be super structured, get in, do it all yourself, and then you issue it to the world. Building products, running companies, being a founder, it's just going to constantly be these curveballs that are thrown at you. And while flexibility is not, may not be something that you really want to embody, I actually think it's a really good trait to have in a founder.
One of the other questions that the interviewer asked him, something about leadership skills. And he said, I'm paraphrasing, but something to the effect that people assume that leadership is about communication, like being the public face of something, you know, getting out a message to your team, to your customers. But he really talked about the importance of listening as a leadership skill, which I just thought was really, really important. And I think there's tremendous superpower in being a good listener, both in one-on-one communication, but in also being able to listen to your customers, to your clients, being able to listen to the world around you, and really, really not being so, I'm going to say burdened, like so burdened by the sound of your own thoughts and your own words and the voice that you want to put out in the world, but really being able to process information and take in ideas and perspectives from a variety of sources really makes, I think, a deep leader.
Yeah. And this is a really tough balance, right? Because as a leader, or even, and this doesn't need to be some grandiose thing where you have hundreds of employees. If you're leading a team of five people with all the chaos that goes on and how hard it is to build a product, launch a product, and you have to start developing a thick skin at a certain point, right? Because you launch something and then customers or prospects will, whatever, one person will have a bad experience and then they, you know, they rail on you on Twitter or they email and they flame your support people, and you have to start developing that thick skin, but also continuing to listen to the right people and figuring that out is really hard. And I do see some founders make that mistake of going one or of the two directions too far, either listening to everyone, and every time anyone makes a suggestion about what to build in your product or that you did this wrong, that they instantly do that, thinking it's the right choice. And that's too far in one direction, like almost listening too much or listening to the wrong people in addition to the right ones. And then the other side, of course, is that you just stop listening to everyone and you just kind of do your own thing. And there's this middle ground where it's like discerning who are the right people to listen to. Typically, that's your team is a no-brainer, right? Everyone that you're working, whether you're managing, being managed, or you know, left to right at the same level, it's like discerning. They're typically in that bucket. And then I think some really key customers that you know have your back and have your best interest in mind, like those are the other folks that are pretty easy to listen to. But you get 10,000 people using your app, and listening is a skill that you have to use with caution, if that makes sense.
And I think there are degrees of listening. I mean, there's hearing, there's just sort of taking in the sound. And then there's this deeper level of listening that does require action, or that is really letting yourself absorb or internalize what you're listening to, what you're hearing. And that, of course, should be done very selectively. Only certain people get to have input into like the inner parts of your brain or the inner parts of your heart. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about in terms of like using listening well, like being selective and intentional about how deeply you're influenced by what you hear. I think I just have sat in the room so often with people who fill up space with talking and just aren't good at asking questions or really listening. And then I guess a thought right on top of that is, as a therapist, really the essence of my training is deep listening. And people are always really surprised by what I remember. Like, you know, their dog's name from when they were six that they told me a story about one time. But that's because I'm really listening and collecting lots of information and details about a conversation or about a person, because I'm really paying attention when I listen. Not always. Definitely when I'm, you know, like in my personal life, might not be using that superpower as much, but it gives great power. It gives great ability to form insight and make connections when you're listening really carefully.
And the other article that we wanted to talk about is another entrepreneur.com article. We'll link up both of these in the show notes. This article is a little clickbaity. It's called 10 Tweaks to Your Morning Routine That Will Transform Your Entire Day. And while I'm not sure that's totally accurate, there are 10 points here that I think that, you know, are kind of worth talking through and worth digging into, even if you've heard some of them before.
I was struck by the introduction to this article and the kind of the why this is important. The author talks about optimizing for energy, which is obvious, and self-control, which I thought was a cool way to phrase what is important about how to begin your day and what you want to bring to your day. Because I sort of expected it to be about energy and focus or energy and something, but self-control is a really like higher order executive function skill. And when we think about using self-control well, you're really filtering out what is not important. You're filtering out distractions. You're focusing on, you know, your goals or what you're trying to accomplish for the day. And your capacity to regulate and filter is, in essence, self-control. So I guess I just haven't heard that phrase talked about in entrepreneurial circles that much. I think, you know, we often talk about focus, but I think self-control is a more nuanced and perhaps more accurate and more insightful way to talk about what skills we really need to bring to each day in order to kind of optimize for awesomeness.
Yeah, the author said there's a study and they say the researchers found that self-control and energy are not only intricately linked, but also finite daily resources that tire much like a muscle. Even though we don't always realize it, as the day goes on, we have increased difficulty exerting self-control and focusing on our work. As self-control wears out, we feel tired and find tasks to be more difficult and our mood sours.
I was a little bit surprised you sent me this article being as you're not really someone who enjoys mornings.
I hate mornings. I wish mornings would
start at noon.
I wish mornings would start at noon. Yeah. I've gotten better over time, but you know, one thing that I don't know if it's just getting a little older or if it's, I've changed my morning routine. Like I don't drink coffee in the morning, usually until I get to work. I eat a high protein breakfast. So I try to eat no carbs for breakfast. I do some other stuff. I mean, there's 10 points here that I think are interesting. They say to start with exercise. I've never been able to do that. When I used to try, I would almost hurt myself because my body was all stiff and I tend to be just super tired and groggy in the morning. But you often start with exercise at like 5:30 or 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah, that's my optimal time, mostly because of the kiddos. I mean, that's really what motivated it. It just wasn't happening later in the day. It's never going to happen after school. I don't like doing it in the middle of the day because I wear makeup and do my hair, and you know. So yeah, early morning exercise has been, it's just been like functionally when I could do it, but also now love it. Like days when I don't exercise in the morning for whatever reason, I feel really laggy and like my body's like, wait, we haven't gotten to play yet. So I feel like early morning exercise has been super, super important for my focus, productivity and mental health, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, I don't exercise first thing in the morning, but I have been riding now that the weather's nice. I ride my bike to and from work, which is, it's about a 25 minute ride at a pretty good clip. And although that's not first thing in the morning, right? I get up, we do, you know, music with the kids and we eat breakfast and shower and all that stuff. I do find that once I get into work, I'm almost like, I kind of have like a caffeine buzz, even though I haven't drank any caffeine. Like my heart's pumping and I'm all wired and tends to be in a good way. Some days I get a little out of control, but I sit down and I'm like, you know, amped up.
I think that's what it feels like to be awake, honey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which has never happened to me in the morning. It's like it's a novel experience to feel that. It says researchers at the University of Bristol found that people who exercise during the workday have more energy and a more positive outlook. Getting your body moving for as little as 10 minutes releases GABA, a neurotransmitter that makes your brain feel soothed and keeps you in control of your impulses. The number two point they make after exercising, start with exercise. Number two is, but drink some lemon water first. Drinking lemon water as soon as you wake up spikes your energy levels physically and mentally. What do you think about this?
I definitely start the day drinking water.
I do too. I guzzle.
The lemon would be a new addition, but hey, why not?
Yeah. I guzzle a big old thing of water right when I get up. It's just good because you basically haven't drank for what, 8 hours or whatever. So I think that's pretty good advice. Third point is no screen time until breakfast. So I tend to do that. I don't, in general, do screens unless like we're having queue issues or something. I don't jump on screens, and I do that pretty intentionally. You do some days look at screens before breakfast.
Sorry.
No, you know, it says when you dive straight into email, text, and Facebook, you lose focus and your morning succumbs to the wants and needs of other people. It's much healthier to take those precious first moments of the day to do something relaxing.
So I usually get up and exercise. I come home and I will usually pop on email real quick. Sometimes it's because no one is awake yet and it's like 20 minutes of quiet that I have. And I'm often like checking for any variations in my schedule for the day. So if anybody has contacted me that needs to meet with me, or anybody's canceling a meeting with me. So generally at that time, I'm kind of thinking through what my day looks like. And so I usually do check my email just to see if there's a scheduling issue that I need to know about or be aware of. I don't often respond to emails at that point. I just sort of, and I realize that there are definitely reasons to like go throughout your day without doing that. But I think because of the nature of my day and the timing of when our kids go to school, if I don't do it at that point, I'm often not going to have time to do it until like 9:30. And often I'm jumping into my first meeting. So it's important for me to have at least like a schedule gauge of the day. And I don't read things carefully at that point unless they have to do with what's happening in my day that day.
Yeah, that makes sense. Their fourth point, I think we do a good job of this. I know a lot of folks who do not, but it's to eat a real breakfast. They say eating anything at all for breakfast puts you ahead of a lot of people. People who eat breakfast are less likely to be obese. They have more stable blood sugar levels, and they tend to be less hungry over the course of the day. When you eat a healthy breakfast, the doors to a productive day swing wide open. A healthy breakfast gives you energy, et cetera, et cetera. What, I think we do a pretty good job of this. What do you consider a healthy breakfast? Like low carb?
Yeah, and a variety of nutrients. Like my favorite breakfast right now is like whole wheat toast, half an avocado, and like a little bit of Greek yogurt with some berries in it. That like works for me.
Yeah, whereas I'm more of an egg person with some spinach on it. It's kind of been my deal.
Yeah, so I think when you have, you're basically talking about the food groups, right? You eat something green, some kind of veggie in there, something with protein, something that's going to give you energy, not a thin sort of flaky carb, but something that like a, you know, like a wheat toast or something that will kind of help you power up. And I think drinking a lot of water in the morning is a great strategy. I know for me, when I get going throughout the day, I can often kind of forget to have water with me. So I try to drink like a really like full substantive glass of water with my breakfast. And then I usually have a cup of coffee.
Yeah, I notice you've been pretty deliberate about that. You're like, no coffee until I've drank all this water. That's good.
Well, partially because I've often just been working out for an hour or just gone for a run or something. So my body really, really needs water.
Yeah.
So I don't think we have time to talk about all 10 of these, but what was like one or two other ones that you thought were really important in terms of thinking about optimizing your morning routine?
Yeah, another one on this list is number 7, and it says no email until you've eaten 3 frogs. And eating a frog, in quotes, this is from the article, is the greatest antidote to procrastination, and the most productive people know the importance of biting into this delicacy first thing in the morning. Eating a frog is doing, it's doing hard work, right? It's doing work that you don't want to do. It's sitting down and cranking out that blog post or writing that book chapter or outlining the thing. It's the stuff that takes the good glucose and feels very exhausting, and you tend to not want to dive into it, and you'd rather be bouncing around checking email, checking Twitter, or just kind of letting your monkey brain take over. And so getting into a habit of doing, I have not heard of eating 3 frogs. I've always heard of like eat the frog before you do email, like do one thing, kind of your big thing for the day before you even crack open email. This is very, very hard to do. I do not do this. There's no chance. I get an email really early, and it's a bad habit that I've developed. But I actually think this could be a real boon to someone's productivity if you really want to get things done early.
Yeah, I don't think I do 3 either. I do try to do like the hardest thing first. The thing that I most want to avoid, I try to do it first and get it out of the way.
That's a good habit.
But I also will say that when I exercise in the morning, that feels like a frog to me. I know it's not a work frog, but it's like, man, I did something substantive today.
Yep.
You know, already I've checked something really big off my list.
Right.
And the other thing that I have really been working hard for in terms of the morning routine with our family is for our kids to practice their instruments in the morning before school. And it's for this reason. It's that, like, our 6-year-old plays the violin, our 10-year-old plays the cello. It's one of the parenting things I'm a little bit crazy about. But when they practice in the morning, man, I love after school because they come home, they're tired, they want to snack, they want to play outside, they don't want to do anything structured, they just want to, like, be a kid. And I love being able to say, absolutely, you've already done, like, you've done your frog for the day, like, you've done your hard discipline thing. I also really like having them do their chores in the morning. So, like, chores, instrument practice, go to school, and then it's like play and relaxation time. And yeah, I mean, the days that we don't do that and it's like 6:30 and we're trying to do instrument practice, like, oh, such a bummer for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's a really good hack. And you picked up on finding the optimal time of day for certain things, right? And most people have really good creative energy in the morning, and then they get tired in the afternoon, and then maybe they have creative energy like late at night, depending on your body type. You've figured out that, like, our kids, and probably most kids, right, the witching hour is between 4 p.m. and 8 p.m. And so you just don't want to make them do hard things, which instrument practice is. And so, you know, you've kind of instituted this thing, whatever it was, 6 months ago. And I remember at first it was tough for them to get used to. It was a bit of a shock to the family. But as we've developed that habit, it has become a really positive thing. On the days we get it done, the days are better, you know, and the days we don't, they're more of a struggle in the afternoon, as you said. So I think it's not in this article, but it's just kind of something you picked up on, is like, figure out when your body type or when your kind of mental energy is at its peak. And the way I do this in my day to day is I tend to push all of my calls and meetings, I try to push them into the afternoon, because I'm going to tend to be less productive then anyways. I like my developers to have time all the way through lunch uninterrupted, right? So our weekly meeting is at 2:00 in the afternoon instead of some time in the morning. This is something that I think people aren't necessarily aware of. And I wasn't aware of it even as recently as a few years ago, but realizing when you're most productive and then protecting that time is essentially what we're talking about here.
And I think that does circle back to the frog thing, like doing those most important tasks. Like the article says, most of us have most self-control earlier in the day, and that self-control and energy wanes as the day goes on. So I like to organize more like solo focused tasks, things that require my full non-multitasking or undivided attention in the morning. And as the afternoon goes into the evening, it's more like social energy or playfulness or maybe creativity, but not creativity where I have like a hard deadline or something that I need to produce. It's just sort of more focused in the morning and becoming increasingly flexible in the afternoon and evening.
So I think that wraps us up for these. If you enjoyed this episode or you've been getting value from these Zen Founder episodes, head over to supportzenfounder.com and help us out with, even $1, $3, $4, $5 a month helps us pay our editor and keep the show going. Yeah, we look forward to seeing you back again next week.
Hey, we also have a link to a mailing list, and we do not use it very much. Like, considering that Rob started an email marketing company, we really don't do a lot of email marketing for this podcast at all. But I am sort of scheming some things coming up, including some group coaching sessions and maybe an in-person event or two. So that's a good way to kind of keep tabs on potentially interesting, exciting things that might be on the horizon. We will be using that list to communicate that information in addition to talking about it on the podcast.
Yep. And to sign up for that, you can just head to zenfounder.com and you'll see a sign up in the lower right of the page.
Trying to get distracted by how awesomely designed our site is.
Pretty cool. That whole stock WordPress theme really panned out for us.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.